people, yeah. Talking to the ghetto, get down. You're out there floating on your own, hoping the streets will somehow occupy your mind. The hurt when you're alone seems as though reality dropped another life at your feet. Now that you face another day, it leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you. Ghetto people, what are you gonna do? Tell me, do you really think that the government cares about you? No, they don't. Listen to me, I'm trying to tell y'all, yeah.
Ghetto people,
ghetto people, oh, yeah.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Tell me why your life is.
Tell me.
I'm running like a rare disease.
Ghetto people,
stop giving up your self-respect.
Stop it,
ghetto people.
Show some love for yourself, people. Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need, when what you really want inside can only come from you. The day will come when all of your pride leaves you standing around looking like, what am I gonna do? You have those feelings deep inside, a strange kind of sadness you can never get used. Come on, tell me, y'all.
Do you really think that the world gives a damn about you?
Hell no, it don't. Ghetto people,
who you gonna turn to next?
Who you gonna turn to? Listen, people, you better take a look at yourself, yeah. Talking to my people,
but you just don't see
what you're living
at. Living like you're living, caught up in the make-believe,
lost in your
dreams.
Ghetto people,
stop giving up your self-respect.
Stop it, talking to my people. Yeah. Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the banks thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances on the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need, when what you really want inside can only come from you.
Ghetto
people, yeah.
What are you gonna do?
What are you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
With your life,
running like a rare disease.
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So he poured his libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, I hope everything was well with you today. I hope you had a great weekend. I hope you had a chance to do all the things you want to do, need to do, must do, can do, should do, better do. And I hope that the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if you were in the Midwest, boy, with bitter cold temperatures and snow, it wasn't time to be outside. That's for sure. Even though the Super Bowl played in Minneapolis, the coldest weather, although they didn't play the game outdoors, you know. But the coldest Super Bowl in the history of Super Bowls. And yesterday's was Super Bowl number 52. So that's 52 years. Wow. I remember the first one like it was yesterday. Believe me, I do. But the game in itself, I'm glad that Philly won. I hate New England. I hate the Patriots. I'm a Jets fan. So I'm glad that New England won. Excuse me, I'm glad that Philadelphia won. And I'm glad that the brothers and sisters in Philadelphia are feeling it. That's great. And we're going to talk about, during the month of February, I'm going to talk about great historians and great people in our history. Some you may know, some you may not know. Because a lot of times, those men and women who are independent in their thinking, they don't get the notoriety or the press that they should, you know. But we're going to talk about great men and women in our history throughout the rest of this month and throughout the rest of the year, because I don't, like, once again, our history is 24/7, 365, although I'm emphasizing that we must pay attention, we must embrace what we must learn and give this month the credit that is due, because Carter G. Woodson understood clearly what has happened to us and is still happening to us. That's why. And when you hear ignorant Negroes talking about we shouldn't have this month as a day, they're only doing that because they have no idea. They've been so whitewashed, Europeanized. They suffer from the Urugu virus inflicted upon them by the Urugupians, and we act in that manner. So please, dear brothers and sisters, learn, grow, discuss, talk, share. This is African Perspectives, and we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times I'm going to give are Eastern times. And, of course, you can call this number, 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832 is our call-in number if you want to give your African perspectives on issues and discussions or topics that are being discussed. But like I said, we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you can't listen live, you can always go to the archives at Black Talk Radio Network and push African Perspectives. You see a whole range of programs when you go on Black Talk Radio Network's page. All kinds of programs, of course, Time for an Awakening, which is the program we're under. But we're also listed separately as African Perspectives. Today, let's buy Black 365 this evening on Mondays at 8 p.m. Let's buy Black 365. On Wednesdays, let me talk about Tuesdays, because I'm going to give a shout out to my brother, Straight Black Survival, Brother Kafuru, and what he's doing over on the Straight Black Pride Radio Network, or with the Irritated Genie. They come on Tuesdays at 7 o'clock from 7 to 10 Eastern. Brother Kafuru, he was the winner of the Black Power Awards for Talk Radio. Proud of that, brother. Outstanding. On Wednesdays from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Revive with Sister POC, Revive, 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, in the spirit of Ujamaa, which is cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. And that is from 9 p.m. to 11 with Baba Kambizi, Baba Kakima, Sister Nanana, Sister Shea, Baba Thurman, and myself, and Brother DJ, all of us with ULU every Thursday night. Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, Us Lifting Us. And also, too, very excited, the Cafe ULU will be opening up very, very soon. Work is being done as we speak. On Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern Time, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an Awakening every Friday from 8 until Saturdays, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Saturday later afternoon, and I believe we're going to finally have Dr. Rogers up and running and aboard this week, which is my main focus. Got to have it. I know Dr. Rogers, you usually listen, and so I'm hoping that that'll happen. And so Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturdays. On Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Nope, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. It is not African Perspectives. It is Revive with Sister POC from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. And then Sunday evening from 7 p.m. Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. There's all other programs that are going to be coming soon to Time for an Awakening, and those will be announced as well. I'm going to, once again, periodically, give the Nguza Saba. I know, you should only talk about the Nguza Saba around Christmas time. No. These principles were to be instilled in our everyday lives. It is not just from December 26th to January 1st do we need to. That is a time to focus, just like February. That is a time to put some focus and some energy and some effort into it. But it should be 24/7, 365. Our history and the principles that will help sustain us should be 24/7, 365. But there is a time that we put some energy and focus onto them. And for the Nguza Saba, yes, okay, it's Kwanzaa time. And for our history, yes, it's February during this time. But we always give honor and respect and reverence to our historians and our scholars and our men and women who bring knowledge to us and the concepts that will unite us. We always. My good sister Mama Marimba Ani gave us the African sovereign interpretation of Nguza Saba. Unity, umoja, the Pan-Africanist vision of African people throughout the world.
This call is being recorded.
Joining forces to fight for African sovereignty and to build the African world order. Could you tackle Leah, self-determination? African people defining ourselves and determining our own destiny as a sovereign people. Ujima, collective working responsibility. African people working together, being responsible to and for each other, and accepting a common system of accountability. This is the sovereign interpretation. This means that if we embrace these and we embrace these the way they are, it sounds good. And so I'm saying this is what we must do. Ujamaa. Ujamaa, cooperative economic cooperation based on the concept of African familyhood, interdependence, interrelationships, and community and national and global African unity. No matter where we are, on the continent, throughout the diaspora, we are an African people. NIA, purpose, African people sharing common goals that determine our commitments and guide our choices and decisions. This gives purpose to our lives and to our work and tells us why we were born African. Kumba, creativity, to think with African minds and to create from our own African center. When we practice this principle, we no longer imitate non-Africans. We make our own way. We ain't asking nobody for permission, for anybody's help. We're doing it ourselves. We're doing it with and for each other. Imani, faith. To believe in the vision of African sovereignty and to have the passion and the will, the heart, the determination to bring it into being, regardless of whatever obstacles are put in our path. So periodically, I'm going to be continue to read that, continue to help us understand that's the direction that we must go. These are the things that are important to African people. So we thank all those who understand what we are about and what we're doing to help move our people forward. Dr. John Henry Clark is our focus today. I focused on Carter G. Woodson, probably two of the most, for me, two of the most impactful scholar historians in my life. Dr. John Henry Clark, and Dr. Carter G. Woodson. Oh, there are many others. Love them all. Appreciate what they have made a contribution, the contribution that they've made. But somehow I have a fondness for Dr. John Henry Clark and for Dr. Carter G. Woodson. We talked about Woodson last week. Of course, it's appropriate because he is the person that designated this, you know, a week in this month, later to be deemed a month in 1976. And I know that some of our people, why they give us February, the shortest month of the year? They don't give you anything. They give you nothing. And even when they do, because you have pressed upon them to do something, they don't do it with reverence and respect. They can give less than a damn. They can give less than a rat's. So we honor ourselves. We honor each other. We don't look to the Caucasian for their acceptance of anything. Dr. John Henry Clark was born January 1st, 1915. He passed July 12th, 1998. In fact, in 2015, about, I don't know, 30, 40 of us, maybe a little bit more, maybe around that number, we took a caravan to Columbia, Georgia, where he is buried. You know, he was born in Union Springs, Alabama, January 1st, 1915, and he passed in New York. But he is buried in Columbus, Georgia. And we had a ceremony on the 100th anniversary of his birth, 1915. Very moving, very spiritual, very profound. I was honored to be in the company of many brothers and sisters, scholars, historians, who were in Atlanta that weekend for the ASCAC South Eastern Region meeting. And we went to the birthplace. Excuse me, we went to the burial of Dr. John Henry Clark in Columbus, Georgia. Because they moved there after, he was born in Alabama, but they moved to Columbus, Georgia, and that's where he grew up, you know, before he went to New York. Because, you know, his mom wanted him to be a farmer, and, you know, he wanted to be a farmer. He was a learned brother and a self-taught man. And he, in fact, when I put in information about Dr. John Henry Clark in a search, I came up with nothing. And the reason why, if I had put in John Henry Clark, even with the spelling, because he changed the spelling of his name, middle and last, and because he didn't get a doctorate degree from the institution. In fact, it is alleged, it says, in his obituary, the New York Times noted that the activist ascended to professor emeritus at Hunter College was unusual. His ascent, and he's the professor emeritus at Hunter College, and of course, one of his students was my good friend, Dr. Mamurimba Ani. Dr. Mamurimba Ani loves Dr. Clark just as much as I do. Believe me, she does. Unusual, without benefit of a high school diploma, let alone a PhD. It acknowledged that nobody said Professor Clark wasn't an academic original. In 1994, Dr. Clark earned a doctorate from a non-accredited Pacific Western University, now California Miramar University in Los Angeles, having earned a bachelor's degree there in 92. So I could give less in a rat's about Caucasians accepting his doctorate degree or any other degree. To me, if there is a warrior scholar, if he calls or she calls themselves a doctor, and of course, what they bring to our people, I'm not going to challenge unless they are being shysty, criminal, conniving, lying, cheating. Then they should be called into question. If they're saying they're going to do something and they don't do it, they should all be called into question. And not just anybody's educational credentials. Their credentials, period, of who they say they are. If you don't do what you're supposed to do or do what you said that you were going to do, you need to be challenged. You need to be exposed. I love Dr. Clark. I would put in a cassette back when cassettes were happening, cassette players in your car, and I would listen to him talk. I love Dr. Clark. In fact, we're going to play a little bit of Dr. Clark today, a couple of times. And, that Southern drawl he has. One thing that I have to give love to is Wesley Snipes. I don't know if he, I gotta research if he, he played in the movie, a little short feature on the book that Dr. Clark wrote, The Boy Who Painted Christ Black in 1975. And I can't remember. I think in the 90s, it was a short. It's like a half-hour piece. You can go to YouTube, put in The Boy Who Painted Christ Black with Wesley Snipes. Oh, Vanessa Bell Calloway. I love her. Love that sister. I loved her and love her spirit. Love Vanessa Bell Calloway. Yolanda King, Dr. King's daughter. This was the last movie she played in before she made her transition. Jasmine Guy. Jasmine Guy plays Wesley Snipes' wife. And it's interesting. And I love it. I really do. I love the movie. You know, it's only a half hour long. The Child Who Painted Christ Black. And Yolanda King plays the child's mother. You know, it's outstanding. So when you get a chance to check it out. But Wesley Snipes produced the documentary, Dr. John Henry Clark's Great and Mighty Walk. And of course, Dr. Clark at the time was blind. He had been all the way blind at this time. And but as he talks about the history in that hour and a half long documentary, you know, I guess sitting at the feet of Dr. Clark. One of the highlights of my life, aside from my two daughters being born and my grandsons being born and all of those good family things, was the opportunity to have lunch with Dr. John Henry Clark. To have lunch with Dr. John Henry Clark in Indianapolis at the Indiana Black Expo. A highlight of my life. To literally sit right there and talk with Dr. John Henry Clark. You know. He also was a staunch advocate. And we're going to read some of his quotes. But he was a staunch advocate for African people doing for themselves. He, you know, when I first started listening to those cassette tapes, there's one of the things that made him search and do all he could to reclaim and recapture and restore our history was he was a Sunday school teacher. And being Baptist, as you know, they have a Sunday school lesson that everybody in the Baptist church reads for that Sunday. And of course, the Bible that they use is the King James Version of the Bible. And a lot of times they have pictures in the front, in the middle, in the back of the Bible, maps and so forth of where these things have taken place. Because one of the things they want those who practice or who are into Christianity, want them to believe that the religion is historical. It is historical. And Dr. John Henry Clark, becoming a historian, realized that the Bible was not historical. But at the time that he was a Sunday school teacher, he would give his lesson and then he would have a question because in the lesson and in the pictures, because sometimes, you know, that's why I try my best to use words and terminology that is different. Because words, and if you agree, words have profound meanings. Words give imagery. If you control the language, which they do, then you can control the thoughts and you can control the imagery. That's why I don't use slave. That's why I don't use black. That's why I don't use some of the words that I believe will give an impression and give an image that favors the European, because it is their language. This is their language. That's what I'm adamant. That's why I'm adamant about using the correct terminology, the correct words. You know. And so he was giving the lesson, and he asked the Caucasian priest. And even to this day, when I hear Dr. Clark talk about it, it makes me feel some kind of way. He asked the priest that I'm seeing all of these pictures. Where are our people? And the priest said, I'm sorry, John. Your people have no history. Your people never done anything. I could feel how he felt when he found that, when that happened. I could feel. And that led him on the search for our history, to reestablish our history and then to reestablish our culture and to feel good about it. That's why I love and respect Dr. John Henry Clark. I don't give a damn if he had a doctorate degree from whatever. In fact, when he went to New York, he looked up Arthur Schomburg, and he goes in there and to the library and introduces himself, and Arthur Schomburg, Arturo Alfonso Schomburg from Puerto Rico, Arthur Schomburg. And he says, I want the history of my people henceforth and right now. Let's go. Give me the history of my people. he told him, die. So John, wait. I'm going to help you do the research. I'm going to help you. And that's what Schomburg did. And, of course, the Schomburg Library in New York is named after Arturo Alfonso Schomburg, which is another charity that I donate to keep that going. Love to visit. When I was in New York, the last time I was in New York, I think was, 9/11, I think. I think it was the last time I was in New York. I can't remember, but I think it is. But even at that, I would love to go back again and go check out the Schomburg Museum and the other stuff that happens in New York. The firefighters, my good firefighter brothers in New York and so forth, But yeah. Dr. John Henry Clark. We're going to play some Dr. John Henry Clark today. So you can hear the man that I believe is one of the strongest Pan-Africanists. In fact, as he said, Pan-Africanism is the only way. And he is correct. Here he is talking about Christianity was created and Jesus became European.
A powerful black state in North Africa had imperial ambitions of its own. By the 3rd century BC, its forces had crossed the Mediterranean and established a large province in Spain. The military commander of Carthage had apprehensions about his Roman neighbors and warned his son to keep a watchful eye.
Hannibal's father, he would point across the ocean and said, there's some evil people over there. We better bring the war to them before they bring it to us. Hannibal never forget.
Hannibal is only 26 when he takes charge of the army. He launches an audacious military adventure, leading his men and their elephants over the Pyrenees Mountains into France, then pointing them across the Alps, boldly, toward Rome itself. Heavy casualties, overextended supply lines, and defection of allies drive Hannibal off the soil of southern Europe. He retreats back home to Carthage.
The Romans have made a mission, almost a cult, out of the destruction of Carthage. They would meet each other in the morning. Good morning, Roman citizen. Carthage must be destroyed. Yes, of course, Roman citizen. Carthage must be destroyed.
Rome's legions clash with Hannibal near Zama. His troops are defeated. Hannibal is sent into exile. his once mighty nation becomes another colony of Rome and an administrative center for their empire.
Now, the Roman Empire internally was not very rich. Africa became the breadbasket for the Roman Empire. And except for Africa, the Roman Empire would not have been able to sustain itself. Now, the Roman presence in North Africa is going to force into being one of the great events in human history. Roman taxation, Roman oppression would cause people to turn to new gods and question old gods, to turn to a story about a God who comes forth to rescue them. Now, they would draw from African folklore the story of the child in the manger. Now, what am I saying? Later, in retrospect, he was referred to as Jesus Christ. Now, you can argue about the coloration of Christ if you want to, but I can sell that very quick and we can go on to the next subject. Was he a Roman? The answer is no. Was he a Greek? The answer is still no. He was the only European types in that part of the world at the time. If he was neither Roman or Greek, he was one of those other people. And all of those other people were non-European and non-white. And he came from the other people.
During that time of Roman dominance, Africans hold high military and administrative posts in the empire.
The Romans and the Greeks had no color prejudice comparable to the kind of prejudice we would know later on. Otherwise, why would three Africans become emperors of Rome? Why would there be three African popes? Finally, Constantine decided to make Christianity the religion of the whole of the Roman Empire. Now we're coming to the critical period when the Roman domination of the church so corrupted the church, the Africans began some disenchantment with the Roman interpretation of Christianity. Constantine calls a council of bishops and priests at a place called Nice, the Nicene Conference. It is at this conference that the European created a European concept of Christianity. It was at this conference that they began to take the African saints out of the literature of Christianity. Now the corruption had started. The physical concept of Jesus Christ did not exist. Now, how did it come into existence? Because the Pope commissioned it to come into existence. Michelangelo painted the picture using one of his relatives as model. In that picture, one of the finest pieces of propaganda ever projected in history, has changed the minds of millions of people as who's supposed to represent God, whoever he or she is, and I have no problem with the she. Spirituality is a way of accepting the fact that there is a spiritual force in the universe larger than all of mankind. But someone had to come along and invent a word called God. Then someone had to say of another God and said, mine is better than yours. And someone had to create faith. Someone said, I have the true faith. Religion is the organization of spirituality into something that became the handmaiden of conquerors. Nearly all religions were brought to people and imposed on people by conquerors and used as the framework to control their minds. My main point here is that if you are the child of God and God is a part of you, then in your imagination, God's supposed to look like you. And when you accept a picture of the deity assigned to you by another people, you become the spiritual prisoners of that other people. Many Africans became Roman citizens, just like many black Americans today. I have nothing to do with Africa. I'm an American.
You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You can join this conversation. You can dial 215-490-9832. You are listening to the words of Dr. John Henry Clark, one of the great warrior scholar historians, somebody who I respect and admire greatly. Some of his words, some of his writings, and I just mentioned, of course, his short story, The Child Who Painted Christ Black, which you can go online. I'm not sure if you can go online and get the whole documentary, A Great and Mighty Walk, by, because what you just heard just moments ago was from A Great and Mighty Walk, with, narrated by Wesley Snipes. But you can watch the whole video on the child who painted Christ, the boy who painted Christ, excuse me, the boy who painted Christ black. These are some quotes by Dr. John Henry Clark. Like I said, I could sit and listen to him all day. I didn't find this quote in the numbers of quotes I have, but this one I love because it is about the revolution for African people. The revolution will have to be technical, spiritual, and cultural. It will have to preserve and enhance the best of old Africa, which will be the main ingredient for the Africa still to come. That means that it's a foundation. At the heart of the solution will be the concept of Pan-Africanism, a dynamic program of Pan-Africanism working for the unity of African people throughout the world. It's the same as what Sister Marimba gave us with the Nguza Saba, which links us as an African people on the continent throughout the diaspora, has one African people globally. To control a people, you must first control what they think about themselves and how they regard their history and culture. And when your conqueror makes you ashamed of your culture and your history, he needs no prison walls. He needs no chains to hold you. And that's what happened. Dr. Clark said, not only did a European go around the world conquering and taking everybody's stuff in the name of, so he colonized the world, but even deeper, he colonized information about the world. If you expect the present-day school system to give you history to you, you are dreaming. This we have to do for ourselves. The Chinese don't go in the world, and the Chinese didn't go out in the world and beg people to teach Chinese studies or let them teach Chinese studies. The Japanese didn't do that either. People don't beg other people to restore their history. They do it themselves. They do it themselves. It is our responsibility to reclaim, recapture, restore, and more importantly, implement the history of our people. That's our responsibility. Powerful people cannot afford to educate the people that they have oppressed, because once they are truly educated, you will not ask for power. You will take it. So us as a people, Once we come into the right knowledge of ourselves, we won't ask for something. We will just take it. We have a caller, 646. Good morning.
Hey, Brother Olson.
Hey.
How are you doing today?
I'm fine, Jay. How are you, brother?
I'm good, brother. Hey, listen, I got a like a quick question for you. As a Pan-African and African nationalist, should we be sitting down eating with the Yorugu, having the Yorugu in our home?
I would say no. I mean, right. I'm emphatic about, I guess for me, looking at our history and seeing how we have been undermined, how we've been manipulated, how we've been played, and many times some of our people have done that to us because they've been instructed to do that by the Yorugu, by the Caucasian, you see. Because sometimes the Caucasian knows that he, just like they have all these surrogates, you know, who is one of the big opponents of affirmative action? A lot of our people, particularly a dude named Ward Connerly out of California, he went around the country. Even though he got his degree through it, it's the same as Clarence Thomas. Clarence right. Thomas got his degree through affirmative action, but once he got his, he wanted to close the door. He wanted to shut it down, you see. Because really affirmative action, of course, benefited Caucasian women more than it benefited anybody else. But by the same...
They'll never tell that truth.
No, they won't. Because of affirmative action, welfare, all of these so-called handouts are perceived to be us. We're the ones that right. are getting it. You know, and so we are the ones who should be denied, because that's how they play things, you know. So no, we shouldn't be the only persons we should be sitting down with is each other, and from various parts of this country and from various parts of this world and truly from the continent, we need to all sit down and talk about how are we, as African people, going to run our lives again, independent of anybody else? How are we as African people going to come together with all the levels of expertise that we have to build a nation, to build businesses, roads, factories, schools, hospitals, ports, railways? How are we as African people going to build planes so we can come in, so we can participate in the 21st century as a free and independent and proud and productive people? That's the only conversation we should be having. And nobody should be in that conversation but us. But us.
I mean, your home is your most sacred place. So I don't know why you would ever feel it's necessary to have a Yorugu in your home. I don't care under no circumstances. Would you ever, or should you ever, allow that Yorugu in your home? No. It's just not natural.
No, I agree with
you. It's not natural. And then to sit down and to cook and to feed them, it's a whole different thing, man. Imagine, you know, you having to drink out of a glass that you served to the Yorugu. Oh, man, come on. You know, yourself as an African, you know, in all of these things, you know, no, man, it's just not a natural thing, and we as a people should get to the place to where as we don't even support that type of foolishness, man, because, you know, it cause the ideas on what your principles and your value system should be. You know what I mean? You know, that's the greatness of Dr. Clark, man. Dr. Clark, he let you know who your enemy was. No doubt. He didn't play that game.
No, he didn't.
You know, and I'm glad I had the opportunity to take his class when I was at Hunter College and he was there teaching. He was just a straightforward man, and you know, I took it when I didn't have no consciousness or anything, and I didn't really know who he was, But it was the thing that I enjoyed most about it was the way in which he dealt with the Jurugu when the Jurugu would try to question him about his knowledge and wisdom. He just busts him up.
Oh, I loved it, didn't he?
Oh man, you know he served you.
Yes.
You know, and there's always that Jurugu in the class that wanted to challenge you. Always.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I remember one day one of them challenged him, and after he got finished letting that behind up, man, that white boy didn't say nothing for the rest of the semester.
I love
it. He didn't say nothing for the rest of the semester. And Dr. Clark would always say good morning to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Dr. Clark was a man who, you know, didn't really, how could I say, he didn't show arrogance, but he was arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? In a way, not in the arrogant sense of way, but he was just so sure and so confident of himself. You know, the way that he walked, the way that he talked, in regards to when he sat down and he started the lecture, you know, like he said, I don't debate nobody who ain't on my level.
That's right.
You know,
you're right.
People don't understand that. But in the classroom, he would sit at the desk and he would just present the information. And if somebody was bold enough to question him, he'd just like that behind up. And that would be it. And he would, and you know, the one thing, good thing about him is he did it in such a smooth fashion, man. Oh, man, Dr. Clark was smooth.
I love it.
He was smooth. He would present it in a nice tone and everything. You would really never hear him raise his voice or anything like that. He was the real deal, you know. And then from seeing them over the years, from that period of time, as I got into a little bit of consciousness, give lectures and things of that nature, you know, he was no joke. But I tell you, I don't know if you ever heard this lecture, but I'm going to tell you the best lecture I ever heard. And it was by a brother that was the right-hand man of Dr. Ben. His name was Professor George Simmons. And he had this lecture, the most classic lecture. If you could ever find the lecture, find it. Is the black man the white man's footstool?
Mm.
Anybody in your audience from New York City, if they ever heard that lecture, they will tell you that was probably the greatest lecture of all time. Is the black man the white man's footstool? And oh man, Professor Simmons, he dropped it, man. I that's the one lecture that I would love to get a hold of that I haven't been able to get a hold of. And I know somebody got it, but you know what I mean? I haven't ran across the person who I think got it. But that Brother Oshi was one of the greatest lectures I ever heard. Is the black man the white man's footstool. And the way that he broke it down, it was just incredible. And his analysis basically was that because of our self-hatred and our lack of knowledge and understanding of who and what we are, we will always be the white man's footstool.
Because we put him
above all things,
right,
without even trying to gain knowledge and information on to who and what he was, and that he could never be your superior because you was his teacher. Oh man, it was a powerful lecture. But you know, in reality, we deal on that term, Brother Oshi, to whereas truthfully, we don't feel good about ourselves as an African people on a certain level when you're a Negro P to even be able to identify, first of all, that the Jurugu is your oppressor.
Right.
We don't honestly want to even come to grips with what this beast is and who the beast is. For some reason, you know, I think we intimidated by the to be confrontation.
Well, because
because
Jay, we've been trained to, and right, also trained, too, yeah. also too, you see the ramifications if you don't. You know, right. The bottom line is, they will kill you, and they have been killing us, and they are killing us now. You know, and so what Dr. Clark understood very clearly, you know, and I would like to see that or hear that, read that presentation, because I believe, you know, you're most correct. But he understood that as well, that if you allow an oppressor to continue to oppress you and you don't do anything to challenge it, then you will succumb to them. That's why I hate, and I mean I hate, when we say we're our own worst enemy. I hate that.
Well, you've been trained to be your worst.
Exactly.
You've been trained, in essence, to be your worst enemy.
Exactly.
Because I think a lot of it has to do with the Sky Daddy syndrome. You know that you're supposed to live to go to heaven instead of die to go to heaven.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's why, you know, in all truthfulness, you know, nobody wants to die. Everybody wants to live. So, you know, you won't take that step necessary to get the oppressor off your back, man. That's why I have great respect, to be honest with you, for the brothers back in the 60s and the 70s and the Black Panther Party and them brothers, man, and the others who was in the movement, like the Black Liberation Army and all that, because they made a commitment to die. You know what I mean? And it's like you got brothers today, OG, that are sitting in these prisons, man, that they've been there for 40 and 50 years, man.
Yeah.
You know, and they won't even let them out. They got a brother now, I think his name is Herman Bell. I forgot his African name, but he's up now for parole and
okay.
they won't let him out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think out of that movement, maybe a few of the brothers have gotten out. To show you how deep it is, Matula Shakur,
right,
basically his time was up.
Yeah.
And they still keeping him in jail. And there's nothing in place we as a people to force them to let him out.
Exactly.
I mean, even think about what's his name? Brother Jameer Ali, formerly H-Rap Brown.
Yep, he's down here in Atlanta.
Up there
yep.
In the worst of conditions.
Well, all of them. Brother Jay.
Yeah, all of them.
Yeah, Brother Jay, all of them. Sandy Adekole, who's been in prison since the 60, late 60s. You know, all of them. Mumia Abu-Jamal. Every one of them, they, you know, are political prisoners. And there's a number of them, brothers and sisters, who fought against this system and who are willing to do whatever it takes. Now they have been in prison for a long time and they will not be getting out. And even though we do have some of our people who are astute in the law, they're lawyers, they may even be professors of law, still haven't done a damn thing to address this and to get these brothers out who have been in prison because they were political prisoners. They didn't rob or steal. They challenged this system, which is an evil system, for what it is doing to us. And yet they are willing to let these brothers and sisters languish in prison to their death because they challenged this system.
And they're the ones who are responsible for getting to the position that they're in. That's the thing that gets me is you don't even have the reverence or the love to do anything for them, brother. That's why I always try to give a couple of dollars to the Jericho Mile whenever they putting forward, you know, some sort of affair or anything of that nature. Because to think about it, them brothers have given up the ultimate sacrifice for our people. And you know what the beautiful thing is, man? That they still see the light and still see us moving forward to independence. It's like even the brother that I know, you know, Daruba Ben Reinhardt.
Yeah, Daruba, right? He's here in Atlanta.
I know you know Daruba.
Yeah, I do. Right? I know Daruba. He's here in Atlanta.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's here in the manor. And, you know, I really felt bad when he was attacked by Malik Judo-Jabez. I really thought that, you know, we as a people should have stood up and dealt with that situation. But, you know, that Negro's still able to walk around and do his thing. There's just certain situations that we have to protect our brothers from. But, you know, those are warriors, man. How do you think about this? Them brothers are in the worst conditions one could be in and constantly under threat of being violently attacked. It just happened to Herman Bell. He was attacked by them barbaric prison guards. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But they still stand firm. You know what I mean? They got as much of a commitment now as they ever had. And we're not doing anything to liberate them from their situation. And we sit up there and we talk about, you know, things that are just, you know, crazy, man. It's really, really, all I could say is it's just tragic, man.
Well it is.
It's tragic, you know.
Jay, it is, but believe me, I don't come on this radio program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time and bitch and moan and cry. And that is no, I come on here to give you the information based upon the scholarly research of our scholars and historians, the information that provided, you know, to give us the motivation and the inspiration that we can get up out of this madness.
But
we
you
must.
Know, Brother Oshie, let me, you ever notice this? And a lot of people don't talk about this. You ever notice how the scholars and the elders put forward information and that Jerugal never really tries to challenge the knowledge and the wisdom? They just try to discredit it. They never come back with any scholarly work to disprove them. You ever notice that?
Of course.
And the Negro team still don't believe
right.
what the Dr. Clark, the Ivan Van Sertima,
exactly.
and the rest has presented to us and use it as a guideline to move us forward as an African people. You ever notice that?
Yeah, I do.
You know, if you ever notice a debate between one of our scholars and the Yorugal never win. Remember what Francis Wesleyan did to Arthur Schlesinger?
Yeah, the shock.
You know, and we don't even expose that type of knowledge and wisdom to our children so that our children can see the greatness we present when we deliver our information in regards to our struggle here with this filthy, stinking dog.
Well, just like you mentioned Dr. Clark, he said, I don't argue or debate with, you know, people, you know, I debate with people who are my equal, everybody else I just teach. And what he's saying is, I don't mess with these caucus because they can't handle it. They can't handle the truth. That's why they got all these surrogate Negroes to come challenge our scholars and historians. It's pathetic. It's
sad.
I haven't seen
all the debates that I saw with Dr. Clark and others, I never saw anyone that could hang with Dr. Clark. You know what I mean? Because they couldn't refute the information.
Exactly.
But the information was too sound.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that's the thing that really becomes annoying at times when you're dealing with this sick, twisted Negro P. He doesn't want to accept the fact that there is African greatness before the Yorugal ever came into existence. That's a really serious thing. When you can't even accept that you come from a great people and you were part of giving humanity what it is, and then the Yorugal came around and just absolutely twisted it to hell. You know what I mean? How could you not accept and deal with that?
And
a lot of people can't.
Right, because what you're saying is that even though the cracker did that, the sadness, the patheticness of it is that we are defending it. And we are defending what they've done to us, to our other brothers and sisters. It's sick, you know, because, you know, the cracker can't stand up to it. It's just like when they had the symposium in 1975 in Cairo of who were the ancient Egyptians.
And Dr. Sheikh Anjou Jop and Dr. Thelophilio Binga won the debate. They won the argument. They kept producing more and more evidence to the United Nations, said, hey, you know, we're going to write the history of African people in 2-3 volumes of what it was. And because you guys won the debate. But, hey, the cracker don't give a damn about truth.
No, he never has.
He never has, and he never will. So what happens? So he dismisses it. He dismisses what we have presented because he has cognitive dissonance. He believes that he is superior, and anybody else who brings information to challenge my superiority, I'm not going to acknowledge it. I'm going to dismiss it. I'm going to ignore it, and I'm going to continue on with the belief of who I am at the expense of everybody else. But the problem that I have is this. I don't give a damn if crackers don't believe it or not. Our problem is that why do we believe that? Why do we challenge one another? I was talking to a brother. In fact, I'm going to have him on my program. It's Brother Frank Jones. Brother Franklin Jones with the Black Matrix had a conversation with this weekend. He's going to be on the Wednesday's program, so please give a listen, brothers and sisters, and particularly you, Jay, is going to have come with some good information. But but I was talking to him, you know, about why, you know, we still challenge one another. It's a damn shame that we have to argue or discuss amongst ourselves whether or not our history is correct, you know, whether or not we should be free, self-determining, liberated, and sovereign. That's a damn shame that we ought to argue about that. In fact, the only discussion we need to have about that, Jay, is how do we achieve it? How can we come together to make it really happen for our people? But to debate and argue about whether or not we should be free, whether or not we should be self-determining and liberated and sovereign, that's a damn shame.
But you know it's even deeper than that. On that front is that the Negro being don't even know the nature and the character of the Yoruba. He's nothing more than a murderer, a liar, a thief, a rapist, everything that is anti-nature. That's what that Yoruba is, if you think about it. It's like I constantly try to explain to people. There is no place in this world that people of color have been living in harmony amongst themselves that the Yoruba hasn't come and caused other chaos, death, destruction, and everything abnormal. There's no place on the planet.
No.
You can't name me one place on this planet where he hasn't done it. And the thing is, the Negro people don't want to even accept it. They don't even want to deal with it on any type of level because they just can't believe it.
No, they can't. Because why? They have been indoctrinated. They have a religion that's tied to Europeans, and Europeans has imposed upon them the belief that, in fact, we brought you into civilization. In fact, you being enslaved by us really was a good thing because it exposed you to Western ideas and concepts. It exposed you to European religion, Christianity, a savior that has as bad as your condition is, but there's a savior for you. So don't worry about your little earthly existence. And as bad as it is, in fact, I got it in the book that says to you that because you have suffered so much and so continuously over these centuries that you will easily go into heaven.
But you know something, Oshie? All of those things are things that they ripped off from us that we gave to them first.
Yes.
And they flipped it around and used it to enslave us in a barbaric, inhumane way.
Yes.
You don't think about that. We tried to embrace this filthy, stinking dog on a human level when they came out the cave and tried to put them on all twos instead of having them stay on all fours. And look what happened. We should have killed them bastards as soon as we see them and absolutely forget about it.
Yeah,
that was our biggest mistake. mistake.
That's our mistake.
As the people,
right, because we're not that
allowing
great.
Allowing that Urugu to come amongst us and not absolutely put him to death.
That's our mistake. You know, we have where the Caucasian has xenophobia, fear of other people, we have xenophilia. We welcome people. That is not in our nature. That is not who we are. And the consequences to our detriment.
That may be one of our worst traits we ever had.
Right, it's our detriment.
Was allowing that beast out of the cage to come into civilization because he has damn sure destroyed it. And you know something? The thing that shows him to be the beast that he is, every single day he's looking for ways to continuously destroy the planet.
Yes.
You know that? By his bombs.
Yes.
And all sorts of things that he do. Do you know right now in America, they're talking about global warming and pollution and all of the things that are going on with the wing nut that has turned back the direction of trying to clean up the earth? He's basically turning back all of those things for what? A filthy stinking dollar.
Yeah.
And the thing is, with all of the money that this Urugu has, he's still dying. He's still suffering from disease. All of these things. And when he dies, he can't take it with him. And on that note, I got to run. But what time is the brother going to be on OC Wednesday? Because I got something to do early.
Okay, I believe you. I'm going to try to keep him on as long as I can from the beginning of the program to the end, if that's the case. So just jump in when you can, man.
I'll definitely, because I know I got to run out and do something.
Okay.
But I'm going to try and call in. Just keep me on mute, and I'll be able to hold
right
you
on. Good.
Hotep, and have a beautiful day.
Oh, you too, Brother
Good
Jay.
Work.
Thank
All
you, man.
Right
Peace to you. Always like to listen to Brother Jay. Welcome his calls, Brother Joe out of Philly, Brother Marcus out of Memphis, Brother Kwaku Kwaku is in Milwaukee. He's kind of like continental kind of brother. He's Milwaukee. He's in Arkansas. He was traveling around the world. But, you know, my good friend, Brother Kwaku, appreciate him. But all the brothers and sisters that call and listen in, we're going to go back to Dr. Clark, and then we come back, we have some more quotes. We're going to go back to Dr. Clark. And this is his piece, Christianity Before Christ. Christianity Before Christ. And once again, this is on YouTube. You can get them on YouTube. This is Dr. John Henry Clark. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com. and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And you can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832.
All people tell stories to make themselves feel good, and there's nothing wrong with that, so long as you are clear about what you are doing. The Hebrews copied African stories to make themselves feel good and said, that was us. Then we come down and believe it. When the story of Joseph and Mary, and I've personally seen it, in the great lodge of Luxor, was carved in stone, and the story existed 2,000 years before Abraham arrived. The story of Cain and Abram is an old African story, was an old African story before they got there. And there's a whole book of flood stories. Everybody, every culture has its flood story. Now, the Bible is not less a Bible and not less holy because it is part fiction, part history, and part folklore. It is still a book of inspiration. It is still a book of spirituality.
and you can separate one thing from the other and keep it. I didn't say throw it out. I say understand it. I think you can get more out of it by understanding it. And what I'm saying is that the Hebrews copied African folklore and integrated African folklore into the book, but they personified it, saying this happened to us, when in fact it didn't happen to them at all. They merely said it happened to them. All right, now, when they had to face the Pharaoh, who knew not Joseph, and when he said, those of you who wish to obey African law may stay. Those of you who do not wish to obey African law will have to go. Those are the ones who left Africa. Now that's the origin of the essence. All the Jews did not leave Africa because some of them said that they could stay and live under African law. Jews remained in Africa. Some of them were there when the Romans arrived thousands of years later. Now, the Exodus is one of the best known stories in human history. And there is not one iota of proof that it occurred. The Bible is not less holy because of it, but this is a part of Hebrew myth. And it is a good story to teach faith, whether it is true or not. It is a good teaching lesson. Why can't we draw the lesson from it and stop worrying about whether it's true? Now, if you know the geography of Africa, you know that's a 16-mile land bridge connecting Africa with Western Asia. When the Jews came in, they walked in. They could have walked out. So they didn't have to leave by water. At all. And if they left by water, they would have to leave further down. And if they left that way, then they would end up in Yemen. It doesn't go with the geography. Look at the geography. Look at where the land, this is before the Suez Canal. Thousands of years before. Look, the Christian story is one of the most beautiful stories in the history of the world, but you have to separate one thing from the other and keep the story. Don't throw out the story because it is mixed with a whole lot of things that are questionable. You can enhance the story by understanding it and understanding to what extent the story is embellished by folklore. All right, now, 670 people came in. 70 Hebrews came in. 600,000 goes out and still leaves some. Would 70 people create that many people, even if they spent all time creating people? So what we have here is that a lot of Africans, not ethnically Hebrew, became converted to the faith. And they were of another religious persuasion, but not of another ethnic persuasion. And then at this time, religion was so sharp in the minds of each people. Sometimes a religious person, a person in one religion, didn't feel as safe as he thought he should, though religious tolerance was much better then than it is now. All right, now, what did they take out of Africa? They came into Africa without a clear language, without a clear religion, and without a clear culture. When they left, they had all three. Africa had made the Hebrews a people. The early Hebrews became a people and entered history through Africa. And you do not have to argue about whether they were white, black, or otherwise. The only whites who entered the area were Greeks and Romans.
All right.
So now, if you want to figure out where the white Jew came from, that's the problem. The European white Hebrew is nothing but a European belatedly converted to the faith. In the 12th century AD, there was arguments in Europe because the Africans and the Arabs were controlling Spain and the Mediterranean. There was arguments for whose fight you're going to join, the Arabs or the Christians. And there was a group of people who didn't want to join either one of them. They sought an alternative, and they chose Judaism. So the Caucasian Jew is just a European who chose Judaism. And he has no ethnic relationship to the biblical Jew at all.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on TimeForAnAwakening.com and BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. And you can join the conversation at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. You were listening to Dr. John Henry Clark, who we're focusing on today, one of the great warrior scholars, someone who I respect and admire, and had the opportunity to literally have sit at the feet of Dr. Clark and listen to him. I had lunch with him back in the 90s. He died in 1998. And it's just something that I will always remember and always feel good about, having the opportunity to sit down at the feet of one of the great warrior scholars, Dr. John Henry Clark. Here are more of his quotes as we continue to talk about this great warrior scholar. It is too often forgotten that when Europeans gained enough maritime skills and gunpowder to conquer most of the world, they not only colonized the bulk of the world's people, but they colonized interpretation of history itself. Human history was rewritten to favor them at the expense of other people. The roots of modern racism can be traced to this conquest and colonization. They did not only colonize the people, but they colonized the information about the world. And that's why they have done all the evil and dastardly things that they've done, but yet appear to the world to be just and right. That's why I can't stand looking at the British and of course this country tied to the British, being English, consistently shows them and talks about them in reverence and glowing ways, the queen and the prince and the marriage that's coming up, and there's some of our people talking about how great it is that because she is mixed, mulatto, happy, whatever word you want to use, you know, but I'm of the contention, if you embrace your Africanness, you African, because there's no doubt about it that genetically African blood, African genetics, African DNA is dominant. This is a point of truth based on research by geneticists that the African gene is dominant. And so then, therefore, her mother, who is American African, her father Caucasian, you know, and as I look at them, you could see her skin is a few shades darker than his. The one who I don't know which one is these dudes, and I don't give a damn. you know. But I can't stand the British. I can't stand the pompous, arrogant, militaristic Winston Churchill, Lord Chamberlain, all of them, the Queen, the Prince, whatever. I can't stand them. But once again, dear brothers and sisters, I always say, I don't hate anybody. And I don't. I love all humanity. But what I do hate, and what I hate with a passion, is what Caucasians have done. They have given themselves the top position with everybody else a lower position with us at the lowest position. They created a system by its design to favor them over all others. And it did it so well, and it put us in a position where we hate ourselves because we can't be like them and be in that system and have full favor in it. And we blame ourselves. They've done a job on us. Caucasian people think when you love yourself, you hate them. No, when I love myself, they become irrelevant to me. I love that. The main point here is that if you are a child of God and God is a part of you, then in your imagination, God is supposed to what? Look like you. And when you accept a picture of deity assigned to you by another people, you become the spiritual prisoners of that other people. That's why I remember when Imam Waruf D. Muhammad took over the nation and, of course, moved the people to Orthodox Islam. And, of course, Minister Farrakhan came over and brought them back to the Nation of Islam. But the point I'm making here is that they put out a piece to the churches saying that you should remove all images. That's why the image of deity was so important to Caucasians. That's why it was vitally important to them to put the image of Christ to look like them. It was not a mistake. It was the intent. So when you see them and you see the image of God, so the Imam Waruf D. Muhammad said that if you expose a child to this consistently, how do you think that child will look at themselves and look at each other? You see? Yeah. And so, if you're going to be masters of our destiny, we must be masters of the ideas that influence that destiny. And we have to do that. Africans in the United States must remember that the ships brought no captives and called them slaves to the West Indies, to the Caribbean, to Jamaica, to Trinidad or Barbados, to this hemisphere. Those ships did not bring slaves. And they were not West Indians. They were not Caribbeans. They were not Jamaicans. They were not Trinidadians. They were not Barbadians. They were Africans. They brought only African people. And most of us took the semblance of nationality from these places where those ships dropped us off at. So when you went there, you were not... In that travel from Africa to that particular place where it was Brazil, Colombia, to the Caribbean, anywhere in it, Puerto Rico, Jamaica, Trinidad, Barbados, or whether it was Jamestown, Virginia, it didn't make any difference. They didn't bring slaves there. And when they got there, they didn't automatically become those names of those nationalistic places. They were Africans. If you're going to be masters of our destiny, we must first be masters of the influence of that destiny. We have been educated into believing someone else's concept of deity and someone else's standard of beauty. You have the right to practice any religion and politics and in a way that best suits your freedom, your dignity, and your understanding. And once you've done that, you don't have to apologize to nobody. History is not everything, but it is a starting point. That's the point. History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is a compass that they use to find themselves on the map of human geography. It tells the people where they are, what they are, but most importantly, it tells the people what they still must be. History. And to me, I love Malik El-Shabazz, and although some say it's the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, but whoever had that quote is outstanding. Of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. Caucasian had to control everything, and it's vitally important for them to control history, to make themselves look good. I mentioned this quote the other day about Winston Churchill, who I can't stand. He said, history is going to be kind to Britain because I'm going to write it. I ain't looking for objectivity. I ain't looking for honesty. I ain't looking for none of that. I'm looking for to embellish an evil history to make it look good to you. What I've learned is that the whole lot of people with degrees don't have a damn thing. And a whole lot of people with no degrees are brilliant. They don't know a damn thing. And that's true. Because there are people with college degrees, with doctorate degrees, and yet they have, because of their education and their training, have a Eurocentric mindset. Ashamed to be, don't want to be African. In fact, they want to be black. They want to be black. They want to be black Americans. Well, someone, of course, just want to be American. Most human behavior is controlled by images. Images is a factor in how people look at themselves and what they use to reflect themselves. The control of images is a major factor in world power. Those who control the images and what people see and do are in control. That's why language is so deep, because language gives you those images. That's why it's important, as far as I'm concerned, to give words that express a different image. That's why I say captive instead of slave. That's why I say African instead of black. That's why I say Caucasian Europeans instead of white. Because it's important that we know the impact of images on our people. The impact of racism had changed our look of ourselves, because basically racism was meant to make us look unfaithfully at ourselves and to do not treasure our institutions because they were inferior to Caucasians. That was the whole thing about integration. See, the concept of integration is I have qualities and traditions and ways and mores and so forth. You do too. We integrate that and we look at what is best, and we celebrate each other in that way. Yeah, right. No, this was assimilation, because when you assimilate into somebody else, you want what they have. You hate what you have. You want what, so you're willing to assimilate into their mores, the way they do stuff, the way they talk, the way where they live and what they do. Because you hate your own. We will have taken a giant step forward when we face this reality. Powerful people never teach powerless people how to take their power away from them. Caucasians wouldn't even think about giving you the knowledge of self so you can do things independent and on your own. They want you to consistently and continuously be beholding to them, worship them, be thankful to them. And see, that's why Trump is a good example of what we're talking about. One of the things, that, just like they said, that Trump has a problem with us. And what somebody, I can't remember who did that. He said Trump's has a problem with, because he talked about back in the day when Trump and his daddy got busted for not letting brothers and sisters rent, the discrimination that he's shown, the fact that when he found out that a brother was one of his accountants, he fired him immediately and then put in a European Jew. when the Central Park Five supposedly raped this Caucasian woman, he took out a full page ad in the New York Times calling for them to get the death penalty. And then once they were exonerated, he never apologized. He continued on. He was leading the birther thing about Barack Obama's birth certificate. He led that. And then, of course, he said that, you see those football players out on the field? You know, you see those guys? I would love to hear one of the owners say, get that son of a bitch off the field and you're fired, you know. the tete-a-tete that he had with LaVar Ball because of the incident that his son got into in China. And he kept saying, I just want you to be gratefully thankful to work. So he has this problem. But that's the problem that Caucasian people have, period, with us. In fact, what it is they tolerate us. They wish we would all disappear. There is no more cotton to pick. Although we are filled up in the prisons with mass incarceration, and of course, work is being done in the prison because they're some of our privatized prisons, and the whole objective is to make money. Make money for the prison, make money for the investors, make money for that community. There have been many communities that because of corporate farming, smaller communities that had independent farming can't compete. So what happened? And there's no industry there. Prison comes in. Jobs. They're going to take brothers and sisters from urban areas and whatever, put them in those prisons, and they're going to be working. They're going to work. They're going to make money. Africa and its people are the most written about and least understood of all of the world's people. This condition started in the 15th and 16th centuries with the beginning of the enslavement process, that trade. The Europeans not only colonized most of the world, they began to colonize information about the world and its people. It's time for Africa to stop playing the separating game of geography or where the slave ship put us down. We must concentrate on where the slave ship picked us up at, Africa. Not where they put us down at, saying this is Jamaica, this is Barbados, this is Cuba, this is Puerto Rico, this is the Bahamas, or this is Brazil. Where did they pick us up at? Where is our origin? Education has but one honorable purpose, one alone. Everything else is a waste of time. And that is to train and educate the student to be a proper handler of power. Education has one honorable purpose, one alone. Everything else is a waste of time. And that is to educate and train the student to be a proper handler of power. To educate that student, that young man, that young woman, to run a nation. To be independent. To be self-determining. To be liberated. To be sovereign. That's what education is about. That's what it's for. It's not for you to get these damn skills and go beg crackers for jobs. The education should be about understanding who you are and what your place is in the world. Nothing the European mind ever devised was meant to do anything but to facilitate the Europeans' control over the world. That's why Francis Cress Welsing said European Caucasian racism, European Caucasian supremacy, racism and privilege. Now, once again, I don't use the word racism, but, you know, she used white racism. It's in everything they do. It's in all areas of people activity. Her and Brother Neely Fuller put forth this hypothesis. I'm down with it. Not, I don't agree with every letter of it, But believe me, I understand it. And I'm down with it. I understand clearly what she's saying and what he's saying. I understand clearly when he said that if you do not understand white supremacy, how it functions, how it operates, then everything else you think you understand will only confuse you. And I maintain that we are so confused that we're confused in our confusion. And that's how confused we are. And we are very confused. And there's no way in hell that in this day and time, with all of the information and knowledge that is at your fingertips, at a library, on the computer, on television, that you still are confused. I say if African people don't unite and begin to support themselves, their communities, and their families, they might as well begin to go out of business as a people. Nobody's going to have any mercy, and nobody's going to have any compunction about making us captives again. And you see it happening right now. Of course, the Arabs never stopped enslaving African people. They were doing it at the beginning, and they've never stopped. They only on a smaller scale in northern Africa, Mauritania, so forth. But now because of what has been exposed in Libya. And yet at the United Nations, and yet at the African Union, and yet after all of this, all these cries, all these religious people, ain't a damn thing happened. It continues. That's why I'm saying, dear brothers and sisters, I can't wait to this conference on April 14th. And believe me, I'm gonna be there. I'm gonna listen attentively, because to me, 400 years, 1619 to 2019, 400 years next year, that we were being in this mess on this continent. Oh, no, our captivity started even before then. The process of enslaving our people started way before then. But the point I'm making here is that enough is enough. Damn this. It didn't happen for us. It wasn't going to happen because, number one, this Caucasian is selfish, greedy, individualistic, materialistic, and violent as hell. So it wasn't going to happen for us. Please understand that. And now comes the time for us to take our place as African men and women to reclaim and recapture and restore Africa for African people. It is the only place on the planet that we have a legitimate claim to. We don't have a legitimate claim here, brothers and sisters. I know there are some of us who say that we are indigenous to this land. I know that, you know. But the reality is we don't. We don't have a legitimate claim here. The only ones that do, well, you, once again, if you say that we're indigenous to here, fine, that's fine, that's fine. You know, but Europeans came and took this. And I, for one, wouldn't lift a damn finger to fight them over it. I, for one, would not do what I even supported about 40 some years ago, and that is the Republic of New Africa. I don't support taking five states, the Carolinas, Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi. I don't support that. I don't even, because there's nowhere in the United States or on the continent of North America or the continent, even of South America, with the exception, one might argue, about Salvador Bahia in Brazil, where brothers and sisters still practice a lot of the customs and traditions that were brought with them to Brazil, because, you know, Brazil was probably one of the biggest enslavers, the Portuguese, one of the biggest enslavers of our people, captors of our people, you know. But still, if you were in the midst of an open and sworn enemy, I don't think you can sleep comfortably at night. I don't think that you can do anything positive without having some caution or really some fear of any kind of reprisal, any kind of invasion, any kind of I mean, look what happened in Allentown in Southern California. They poisoned the water on those brothers and sisters. Look what happened in Tulsa. Look what happened in Rosewood. Look what happened in Arlene, Arkansas. Look what happened in also too next year, 1919, the red hot summers of 1919, St. Louis, Atlanta, and so forth. All of these things need to be looked at. All of these things need to be discussed. All of this. That's what Dr. John Henry Clark was talking about, looking at all of this and helping us understand. The people and culture of what is known as Africa are older than the word Africa itself. According to most records, old and new, Africans are the oldest people on the face of the earth. The people now called Africans not only influenced the Greeks and the Romans, they influenced the early world before there was a place called Europe. Egypt gave birth to what later would become known as Western civilization, long before the greatness of Greece and Rome. They did. I only debate my equals, all others I teach. I love that. And recently I just pulled a little bit of that debate that he had with Mary Lefkowitz, you know, because she, you know, the Caucasians have to, just like the Christianity piece, the historical piece, they have to have a greatness of Greece. Greece is their greatest foundation. Greece says to the European, we started all of these sciences. We started everything. Greek. But of course, now that we know where Greece got it from, you see, Africa is our center of gravity, our cultural and spiritual mother and father, our beating heart, no matter where we live on the face of this earth. Africa is our center of gravity. Africa is our cultural and spiritual mother and father. Africa is our beating heart, no matter where we live on the face of this earth. That's why I'm saying, and once again, Malik Shabazz said it best, African people globally are not respected, even to this day. He said this. Malcolm has been dead over 50 years. Dr. King will be dead April 4th this year, 50 years. That's a long time. It's a long time. And still today, our people don't understand the importance of the reconnection of Africa, because we've been made to feel ashamed and embarrassed. Look how they live. Look how they look. Look at their dark skin. Oh, look at that matted, nappy hair. But he said, until Africa is free and independent, no one is going to respect Africans. He's right. Until we help liberate Africa, and yes, brothers and sisters, here in the U.S., we have every right to help liberate Africa. Every right. Everything that touches your life must be an instrument of your liberation, or toss it into the trash cans of history. Everything in your life, everything in my life, everything that I talk about and do and say, how my name, my dress, everything is about wanting us to reconnect, wanting us to embrace our Africanness. Because I understand, based upon the scholarly research of our scholars and historians, that it is the only way. This is not Brother Oshi. I'm not giving you my opinion. I don't give you my opinion. Because my opinion is profane. It is deeply profane. What I give you is the profoundness of our scholars, our historians, our elders, our ancestors. That's what I give you. I give you the, I'm trying my best to lead you to, point you to, direct you to, whatever the hell I got to do to help us come into our right mind. Speaking of which, my guest Wednesday will be Brother Franklin Jones, the Black Matrix. Had a great conversation with him this past weekend. Definitely look forward to having conversation with him on Wednesday. I hope that you will too. Let's get some more quotes from Dr. Clark in. In order to have charismatic leader, I love this one. In order to have a charismatic leader, you have to also have a charismatic program. Because if you have a charismatic program, then if you can read, you can lead. When the leader gets killed while you're reading from page 13 of your charismatic program, you can bury the man with honors and then continue the plan by turning the page to page 14. And let's keep going. We don't need a charismatic leader. We need a charismatic program. We need a cadre of leadership that puts forth a charismatic program. A program that puts us back to where we must and should belong in determining our own destiny. A program that gives us independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for us as a people. You have to convince the adults that if a child is to learn his culture, he or she will have to see his mother and father reading about it and explaining it to him. Then it gets a legitimacy it otherwise would never have. Until then, his learning is limited. Dr. Clark said it's important that our parents, but a lot of our parents didn't know. In African matrilineal society, the lineage of the bloodline comes down through the female side. The Arabs who invaded East Africa and other parts of Africa reversed it to the matrilineal, where everything comes down through the male side and the woman has no basic rights except that they would that which the male is willing to grant her. That's deep. That's what I'm saying. We had a society where women were respected and honored and revered, all the way from the very beginnings of society, even to this day. Our concepts of beauty is taken from Hollywood, which is anti-African. We don't see ourselves as beautiful in most cases, although we are naturally one of the most beautiful people out there, but we don't see it. We don't get that point. Hollywood has set the standards. They set the standards. Each generation must assume the responsibility of securing their manhood, their womanhood, the definition of being for their being on earth that in the final analysis is nationhood. Each generation must assume the responsibility of securing their manhood and womanhood, but the final definition, the final analysis is nationhood. It's nation time. It's time for us to wake up, close ranks, pull resources, and do for ourselves. You have been listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. We close this program like we close every program with the words of Stephen Biko, that great freedom fighter from South Africa, who said, "The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed." Brothers and sisters, this program, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. I don't know about any other program, but I know that this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. And not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because Africa is not poor. Africa is rich. All of the resources that are there that everybody wants, can't do without, and don't want to pay for. Dr. John Henry Clark. Africa has all of it. Brothers and sisters, Shemhotep, means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bless you, family. See you on Wednesday. Peace.